So I give her the first tattoo I ever did at our kitchen table. I felt like I had done that before. It was so strange. And I knew that I would keep doing it.
Welcome to the Open Exploration Podcast. I'm on a mission to connect with rule breakers, dream makers, and all around inspiring people to explore the possibilities for living a vibrant and honest life on my own terms. Hey, everyone. I am really looking forward to introducing you to our guest this week. Kat James is a remarkably talented artist with a booming career as a tattooer. I wanted to talk to her not just because of her cool out-of-the-box job, but because of her free-spirited, go-getter approach to life and how she uses her creativity and talent to foster adventure and connection and to lift up other artists and creatives as well. This was a really special conversation, and both of us remarked on how fluid and comfortable and energizing it was. So much so that we ended up talking for way longer than we expected, which means that we get a bonus part two episode out of the deal. So look out for that in the coming days. In part one, we talk about how Kat, who has many passions and talents, landed on tattooing. We talk about the perpetual dance of finding balance in different areas of our lives, about giving our time, energy, and attention to projects that light us up, but also the need to save enough in the tank to be present and enjoy the outcome. The timing of this podcast is important because Kat is hosting an amazing event in the Rhino neighborhood of Denver this coming Saturday, December 3rd. It's called Old Soul Fiesta. It's an artisan market featuring over a dozen artists. It's a party. It's a concert. There will be live tattooing and a raffle to win the work of the featured artists, and you'll get to hear more about it and how it came to be in our conversation. If you're in the area, I cannot recommend this event enough. I will be there and lots of our friends will too. You can buy tickets and check out Kat's work at oldsoulnewtricks.com. That's oldsoul, S-O-L, newtricks.com. And now, part one of my conversation with Kat James. Thank you so much for coming over. I'm so glad to finally meet you in person.
Yeah, me too.
I saw you from a distance at your first Old Soul Fiesta, but I didn't actually get to meet you because
the one that was at Dead Drift.
Yeah.
That one was mayhem.
It was so
fun. In the best way.
Yeah, it actually didn't feel like mayhem to me, but I could tell that you had a lot to do.
Oh, my head was spinning the whole time. Yeah.
Yeah, it was awesome. So how did you come up with the idea of the Old Soul Fiesta? And for those who haven't been to one,
what is it? So I'm a tattooer at Dead Drift. And when I got here 2 years ago, my commitment was to have this apprenticeship with my mentor that didn't have like a time limit on it. It was just like when he decided that I was ready to be done, that would be the end of it. And so when I finally did get to that point of my apprenticeship being over, I was just like reflecting on how many freaking cool people I had met over the last year. I came here with like no friends, basically. And my desire to spend more time with all those people and my inability to do so because there's only so many hours in a day. And so at first it was just going to be like, okay, just, I don't know, throw a party, whatever. It'll be at the shop. It'll be cool. And then I kind of looked around at some of my closest friends at the time, and a handful of them are artists. Unlike tattooing, a lot of art, it's really hard to make it lucrative. And I just felt really grateful to be in a career where I can do what I love to do and make enough money to like get by. And so I was like, cool, I'm just going to expose all my good art friends. They're so talented to my network that I've created here. It was just a huge mutually beneficial event. And so asked a couple of my friends to come sell their stuff, do like a little artist market, reached out to a couple other mostly clients that had become friends that worked for breweries or other drink and beverage companies, and was like, hey, can you get your company to like sponsor this? So we had like three different companies sponsor the event. And then one of my clients was a videographer. So we got together and put together this cool like video and
that video marketing. Was awesome.
It was, his name's Connor Pickett. He's great. He used to work for the Rapids soccer team.
Cool.
And now he moved out to Seattle. I'm like so sad. But he's really, really talented. And I think that seeing that video is what made people be like, oh, this is like legit. Like, yeah. We should go to this
thing. Oh, it was like such a professionally made video. Yeah. And yeah. I will say too, I know I said before it felt like mayhem. It genuinely didn't feel like mayhem to me. It was really well put together and just felt so well thought out. I think.
Thank you.
Recognizing too that you set it up so well for your friends to be successful and to get other artists' names out there and to really sell their stuff.
It went so well. Like, better than I ever could have imagined. I think that night was one of the best nights of probably my life. I remember sitting in the tattoo shop at the end of the night, and I sat in the dark and just was like trying to catch up on all the messages that had been coming through to my Instagram and stuff. And I got a text. It was a text or a message from one of my now good friends here. She was just like an early client, and she texted me, "You should be really proud of yourself." And I lost it. Oh my God. I was just crying in the dark at the shop. And it just, I was like really, really happy being a part of this whole community that like has just kind of developed it totally organically. And that whole event too, it wasn't like, oh, we're going to have an event where we're going to make a bunch of, it was like, no, it was just kind of developed on its own. But the being proud that the event went well cannot be separated from knowing how happy and fulfilled everyone else felt too. Like, it just, I mean, that's what community is about, showing up and providing the skills that we have so that other people can provide the skills and resources that they have, and we can all benefit from each other.
Yeah.
And I think that this kind of was the perfect storm and timing for an event like OSF because of COVID. We all lacked really genuine in-person events and connections. Yeah. And I feel so lucky. I get that every day. I get one-on-one, really super genuine connections with people every time I spend a couple hours with them tattooing. And so I think that's a big reason why OSF was so, it brought so many people together, because everyone craved that.
Yeah. And you've gotten to do a couple more. Are you going to continue doing Old Soul Fiestas?
Oh yeah. So after the first one, I was like, oh my God, we have to do this again, but let's go bigger. Like, let's invite more people. But here's the thing. I already work myself into the ground and have a totally full schedule. So if I'm going to make this a priority and spend my time and money and all this stuff, I have to at least make sure that it makes back a little bit more. And the event itself was definitely the same vibe. Like, everybody got to meet and connect and support all these artists. And it's not so much like, so I went to school for graphic design and marketing. That's my background before I ever started doing anything tattoo related. So branding myself and marketing these kind of events is kind of my forte. It's just an amount of time and coordination that makes it difficult. Mm. If I think we had 10 artists at that event, and you know how hard it is to just hang out with your group of four friends.
Right.
Oh, like, my God. Imagine trying to get 10 people in a room at one time and then hire a photographer that can also be at the time and place for that. And I mean, my schedule already was so full trying to get it in time so that we could put the info out so that people would buy tickets. It was just really high stress. And I do think that I thrive in a fast-paced environment and being busy, that's like my sweet spot most of the time, if I have the time to relax and rest. But I don't really give myself that. I have not given myself that time here. So when the actual event of OSF came, I was so overrun. I was absolutely at zero battery. And the event itself, I was getting the same reactions from all the artists and all the people that were there, and even the coffee shop owners, and they were like, wow, this is incredible, like, full turnout, you know, we sold out of tickets, the art is amazing, blah blah blah, like, music is great, all this stuff. And I was like, yep, cool. I like didn't even have anything, I didn't have anything in the gas tank to even like enjoy the day. And I had to check out like for days after that. I actually booked myself a trip to Mexico for like a week. And I was like, I'm sorry. I can't answer things. I just need to like
recovery time.
Recover. Yeah. And so it took a lot to decide whether I was going to do another one. And I had, by that time, because I had been so excited, I had already put the deposit on a third
Old
Soul Fiesta for September. That was in April. That was the end of April. So it was like, I immediately the next morning woke up, I slept in, and usually I'm up super early, slept in so long. The first thing I did when I woke up was emailed the event venue for OSF3. And I was like, hey, I know that this has been planned and I've put the deposit and all this stuff. Is there any possible way we can push this off until further in the future? And this is like a really popular venue. And so they were like, the only date we have is like this date in December. It's going to be December 3rd. And I was like, great. Oh my God. Perfect. Like,
buy
please,
me
more
time.
More time. Give me more time. Because I do. I want to do it. I want to do it again. I want to do it bigger. And so that was my commitment to myself, was I will throw OSF3, but it has to be balanced. It has to. I have to be able to delegate aspects of that, whatever I can, to other people and trust and like hand it off. That's really hard for me. I'm like gnarly perfectionist. So I want to have like control over everything. And it's definitely a downfall. It definitely doesn't help. It's not great. Like a long time ago when I first was getting into running my own business, it was freelance graphic design. After college, I didn't work for anyone else. I just like went straight into freelancing. And my branding for myself was Cat James of All Trades, because I didn't want to like just do one thing. I wanted to kind of do everything within like the graphic design realm. And let me tell you, not fun. It is not fun trying to balance a bunch of things and trying to be good at a lot of stuff. Yeah. It is, in my opinion, much more beneficial to your creativity, to your work-life balance, to focus on one niche that you really like and are really good at. Doesn't mean you have to do that forever. But to be, have one direction and one focus and just concentrate on that one thing allows you to have no pressure on like things that are outlets, like creative outlets, and keep getting better at that one thing and not just doing everything half-assed.
Yeah. I heard something recently about the idea of flow and like being in that flow state. And in order to get in the flow state, you have to have some level of mastery. Like what you're doing has to be challenging for you and really exciting for your brain. Like it can't be too easy, but you also have to be able to have a vision of like, what is this going to be? What am I working on? You can't be coming in as like a total beginner.
Well, yeah. And I would agree with that 100%. Because when you're in flow in something, it's like fighters like boxing or jujitsu, you train so much so that when you are in that moment, you don't have to think, okay, this then leads to this, then leads to this. It's already automatic. And so that is what mastery comes from, is spending so much time on one thing that it's second nature to you. And so it's been really nice being in Denver. Has like a huge community of artists and really, really, really talented people. And I think OSF has really opened my eyes to the people that are really talented at things that like I probably would have tried to do on my own, like make the video or I don't know, like choose the music or whatever.
Do all the art to sell.
All of it, you know? But it's been really nice to be able to like acknowledge skill and talent outside of myself and be willing to compensate people, knowing that that's an investment in my own time. So like investing in them is like buying my time back, basically, and then letting it be higher quality because someone is in their flow doing their thing that's best for them. So it's been a little bit of a balancing game, knowing that I'm putting so much more money into this, so I need to make so much more money in order for it to go well. But also I have to put the time into the actual logistics of it too. So it's been really tricky. But we're getting there. It's getting better every time.
And then balancing those things with that realization you had with OSF2, which is like, I want to be present for this and I want to enjoy it.
Oh, yeah.
And
I mean,
I'm not going
to
burn myself
out.
That
has to be.
Yeah.
There's a couple times that I sat with myself over the last couple months and I was like, I need to decide whether I am going to do this or not. And if I am, there has to be like commitments that I make to myself. And so that was definitely one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to enjoy this. I'm going to be present. Well, we will definitely backtrack and hear about your story of how you even got into tattooing. But first, I have this burning question. So the Old Soul Fiesta comes from your name as a tattooer, yeah. as an artist, mm-hmm. which is Old Soul New Tricks. Where mm-hmm. did that name come from?
Yeah. So when I was in the process of moving to Denver, that was super, super spontaneous. But when I was putting together the portfolio for AJ, I wanted to rebrand myself. And I think a really important part of that rebrand was that my work as a tattooer was separate from me mm-hmm. as Kat. And even though they were very much so overlapped, that I could have my art and my platform for art not be the totality of who I am and not get lost in between those things. I know a lot of artists and just entrepreneurs can relate to that saying of like, oh, I didn't want a 9-to-5 job, so I started my own business and now I work 24/7.
Right.
and that's could not be more true. Like I never stop working. And so that was like an attempt to kind of like separate myself. And so I was like, okay, well, what is this brand going to be? And I was also transitioning not only like location wise to Denver, but I was transitioning away from tattooing by hand poke. And I had been doing that for 2 years. And so I was transitioning to this machine tattooing, which is like a new form of this craft. And so Old Soul was kind of this like appreciation for like where you've come from and also the concept of Old Soul that like we all know colloquially, which is like you step out of the day-to-day things and you're just like, no, I appreciate things for like the connections and the things that have existed forever. So that's kind of the Old Soul part. And the spelling of that is a little bit of a homage to my time in Mexico over the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years. So Soul is spelled S-O-L, like sun. And then New Tricks is just like, yeah, you can be confident in what you've come from and all the work that you've done to get here, but you have to always be willing to humble yourself and be willing to learn new tricks. So that kind of balance between confidence and being humble and respect for the old way, but like also respect for the evolution of technology and things. So yeah, a lot went into that whole yeah. concept. But it's funny because I think that brand continues to evolve and it's that base foundation like stays the same. One of my like it's a company. Yeah, me and my whole team of me. Me, myself, and I. The phrase that I've kind of coined as our like catchphrase is discomfort is cool. And that's kind of that whole thing of like being comfortable that you know what you're doing, but also like being willing to step into places where you're uncomfortable, doing things that are outside of your comfort zone on purpose, knowing that that will lead to better things.
Yeah, that kind of tension and I guess balance is a better word for it, feels so foundational and so important to mm-hmm. me. Mm-hmm. Like showing up confident and proud of yourself and knowing that you're a badass and showing up knowing that you know nothing and we're all here to learn and we're all here mm-hmm. to make mistakes and put ourselves, like you said, in uncomfortable situations so that we can grow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. There's been a like visual that I've seen throughout my life and it relates to balance, but it's those like, what's the...
Oh, a pendulum?
A pendulum, exactly. And it's not so much having to balance two things at once, but it's being willing to like go to one side of the pendulum, recognize that you're too far on one side, knowing that that's the direction you want to go, heading that way, knowing that you almost always pass through the balance point and you're like, oh, okay, too far. And then every time you go, you get a little bit closer to the midline of whatever that thing is in your life. And then you look around and realize that some other pendulum is out of whack because you've been focusing so much on that one. And it's just a game of like trying to balance all your pendulums and you will never have all of them at the center because every time you recognize that one is relatively
and
like
thank
out
goodness,
of whack.
Because then what would you do?
What would you do? It's constant learning and constant evolution. And I think being able to laugh at yourself and approach those things lightheartedly is like yeah. the best way to do any of that.
I'm laughing because that same, it's funny. I even use the same hand motion of like swinging my fingers back and forth that you're talking about. I cannot tell you how many times I've had that conversation where I'm like, what's the thing called? It's like, I feel like I'm swinging back and forth and I'm trying to find the center point, and then you find it and then you swing something else. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think that's such a universal experience. I think especially for people who are really trying to be present in their lives and to find that balance. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you recognize something's out of whack, and then of course, like, you're going to overcorrect. But I don't know. I don't even necessarily like that phrase of overcorrecting, because I think that that's the natural progression.
It's part of it.
You got to swing back and forth.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. All right. Well, going back some decades.
Okay.
Did you always know as a kid that you wanted to be a tattoo artist?
That's a funny question, because if you would have asked me a year ago, I would have had a different answer. For some reason, I was thinking that the first time I ever really thought about tattooing was my freshman year of college. Maybe because my memory is just trash, but I had a roommate in college. She was awesome. She was so cool. She did like roller derby and she was covered in tattoos, and she's from San Diego too. And she brought me to my first tattoo shop and kind of introduced me to that whole scene. And we bonded a lot over that. And I didn't even spend that much time with her. I think I only really got to hang out with her for a year, but I was kind of like, you were the one who got me into tattooing. And I had been saying that for a while. And a couple months ago, my sister and I were on a call, and we got a third call that came in from a friend from high school who I hadn't talked to in years. And he was like, what are you doing now? Like, I haven't seen you in so long. I'm like, dude, I've tattooed full time. I live in Denver. And he's like, no way, dude. You've literally talked about that since like middle school, like high school. Like, you remember you used to draw with Sharpie, like draw on us, or you would design our tattoos that we wanted to get. And I like, it like dawned on me that I had done that, and I totally remembered, but it was just like, I don't know why I suppressed that or like forgot about it.
Yeah, you like had this whole other story.
Mm-hmm. And I think that was because once I got to my second, third, and fourth years of high school, all I freaking cared about was soccer. And so that kind of became my narrative, because my junior year of high school, I tore my ACL. And so my narrative became like, oh, my dream was to be a professional soccer player. And then I tore my ACL. And then I, you know, and then my story begins there, kind of.
Yeah.
And so I kind of forgot that like art has been, I mean, I know art has been something that I've been naturally drawn to or involved in since I was young. But I guess tattooing was a little bit younger than I thought, but but yeah. So then when I tore my ACL and ended up going to San Diego State, my dad, I think, was the one, my dad definitely was the one who was like, you should go to school for graphic design, because then you'll always have a job. Smart man. Mm-hmm. Smart man. He's like, you're already good at art. Now you just have to add the technology part to it, which is up and coming. Everyone's going to need graphic design and all of that stuff. That first year when I met Alex, I was like, Mom, I think I'm going to get an apprenticeship for tattooing instead of getting a job.
Every mother's favorite sentence.
And she was like, oh, yeah? She's like, cool. Have fun paying for college by yourself. And I was like, wait, what? She's like, I'm not paying for college if you're going to just go get – if you just want to get an apprenticeship in tattoo, like, you don't even need college. What's the point? And I was like, oh, okay, I was like, okay, I don't need to do that right now. Like, it's fine, whatever. So I kind of just pushed it off. But yeah, then I just stuck to graphic design and did that for a long time before I ever got back into tattooing or got into it.
Yeah.
For real.
Yeah. And so how did you finally make that transition? You were a freelance graphic designer. You had a career, like a very sustainable, awesome career.
Yeah. So, I mean, graphic design is awesome because you can pick up and take it anywhere. Like a lot of jobs now, but before that was like not a super common thing to be able to take your job anywhere and everywhere. The hardest thing though about freelance is marketing yourself. Mm. It's so hard to keep enough clients and also be doing the work that you actually like to do.
Yeah.
So I struggled with that a lot. The other part of that decision making and like my career was my partner and I at the time, we loved traveling. We like spent, oh, I don't even know how long we spent in Central America. And so I knew I kept wanting to travel and live abroad. And I didn't want to stay in one place for a set amount of time or commit to, I just never saw myself doing that. And so that was why I didn't get an apprenticeship for tattooing for so long, because I couldn't imagine staying in one place. I just wanted to keep traveling.
How long does an apprenticeship usually take?
From what I understood at that time, it was like, it was going to be a couple years, no matter where or what, how you did it. And it's funny because a lot of people ask me like, oh, what does an apprenticeship look like? How long are they? Dude, we're a bunch of pirates making negotiations with each other. One-on-one, everyone decides. And
no
a mentor, rules. It's a mentor and an apprentice. Like, there is no guideline. You could have an apprenticeship for 6 months. You can have an apprenticeship for 3 years. Like, there is no blueprint for that situation. And it totally depends on the people involved and where you are and all the other things.
That's actually so cool. I think I was thinking about how many systems, and obviously for good reason in most things, but you like have to go through like a certification program, and it has to be this many hours, and it has to, you know, and it doesn't, that's a lot less human and a lot less, it doesn't take into account. How talented are you? How quickly are you learning?
All of the variables. Yeah. There's a book that I came across when I was younger. Actually, my boyfriend at the time brought it home. He had gone on a walk around the neighborhood. And he's like, hey, I brought this book home. I found it on the side. I think you'll like it. And the title was, I'm Right, You're Wrong. And I was like, what are you trying to say?
Why do you think I'd like that?
What are you trying to say? No, he was right. I was totally like that. I was very stubborn and always thought I was right. And he taught me. I am such a better person because of the things that he taught me. That one lesson included in that. But that book talks about, it's a kind of difficult read, but the concepts that it talks about is, we base so many of our systems and our lives on this rock logic of right, wrong, black, white, these like whether something fits into a label or a box or it doesn't, and it's the answer or it's not the answer. When in reality, like you said, humanity, we're so fluid. There's so many variables for everything. So like if I'm making a decision, it's not just it's a year or it's 2 years. It's, well, I don't know. Are you a good artist? Have you spent any time working one-on-one with clients? Do you already know how to use a machine? You know, all these.
Also,
all
like,
these.
What's your goal? Where are you trying to get to before you feel
there's
ready
to endless, fly? There's infinite amount of variables to take into account for a solution. But our society has come to value convenience and ease. But dude, discomfort is cool. Like literally all of the hardest things in your life are what allow you to grow and change and evolve and get better. And if you're constantly looking for the convenient thing, the easiest, the cheapest, that's not, no amount of like ease is going to help you become a better person. It's the figuring out, the problem solving, because the problem solving gives you the best answer, not the easiest and the quickest answer.
And I also think kind of the light bulb for me in this is like, it does feel really comfortable to have something that's black and white and to be able to say like, yes or no. Mm-hmm. Like, will I be ready in 6 months or will I not? Mm-hmm. Right. Like, am I a good enough artist or am I not? And that's sort of a made up thing. Like we love to say yes or no, black or white, but there's not a lot of truth in that.
And I mean, yes, I know there's an amount. We can't have everything be as hard as possible so that we're learning and growing. Cause then you burn out and you can't, you know, there's an amount of balance to those things, obviously. But I think we've come to a point where we overvalue convenience and comfortability. So anyways, tangent.
Back on track.
Yeah. So I met a guy when I was 19 and we dated for like 7 or so years, kind of on and off. So a lot of my youth and like young 20s was spent with him. And we had spent a lot of time in Central America traveling around and doing all this stuff. And at one point during that whole thing, we decided that we wanted to move down to Mexico. And so we packed up the 4Runner and we did a Baja trip, did some content creation for brands. I did like a whole pitch book for a bunch of brands. They sent us a bunch of merch and some money and we kind of like funded our little surf trip on the way to Sayulita. We were going to move to this little beach town on the Pacific coast. So we moved down there and I was looking to establish a life there and figure out how to do that. On our way there, I had worked out, not like physically in the trip, but like in life on the way there. I had connected with a woman who was a photographer and a yoga person. And so because of her, got connected with this guy who was the owner of a couple hotels in Sayulita. So I started doing their social media. So I had like a consistent
gig. Got a job there.
Yeah. And I didn't have to be there really to do it either. I just would collect content every once in a while and then I could kind of be on the road. While that was kind of a foundation financially, and you know, you're living in Mexico, cost of living isn't very high, which luckily the whole last couple of years had been like that because I'd only had to work as much as I had to pay for the cost of living. My work-life balance was
excellent.
Let
overhead
me freaking tell you.
Low.
Yeah. My 21-year-old self is like, bitch, what are you doing working so much right now? You don't have to do this. So we're living in Sayulita and we had a roommate named Karen and she was from Mexico. She was covered in tattoos and we got along super well. She was a great, great chick. But at one point, you know, I'm have this idea in my head, like I really want to pursue tattooing. Like I really want to, I don't know what to do because I don't want to commit to this, you know, being in one place. She goes, why don't you teach yourself? And I was like, nah, dude, those machines, they're so complicated. Like they're so intimidating. Yeah. And I don't really want to that industry. Like I have so much respect for the historical way that things were learned and taught. I actually have a background in yoga. I feel like I've lived like 8 lives. and my background was in Ashtanga yoga. And the way that you learn Ashtanga, I don't want to say correctly because there's not like right and wrong, but
like traditionally?
Traditionally. Thank you. Perfect word. Was you learn one posture at a time in the sequence and you learn it from one person. And they, it's a one-on-one, you learn, it's called Mysore. So you go into this space where this person is instructing you one posture at a time in the series. And once you master that posture, you move on to like add more postures onto the series until you create the whole thing. But basically that you're learning from one person and there's a reason for that. You're not complicating what you're learning because you're learning so many different things. You have like a streamline. This is how we do it. These pieces and parts fit together. You're passing on information, you know, like anything else. So you're learning from a master. That was my romantic vision of learning.
Yeah. I want tattooing. Like one master to pass along their skills in a way that works really well.
And I'm not saying that it's not right to learn tattooing by yourself. There's plenty of things I've learned by myself in my life. I just valued that type of experience more than the other ones. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, nah, dude, I'm not going to do that. She goes, no, don't, not with a machine. Just teach yourself hand poke. And I was like, huh? Like, I don't even know. I don't remember. It was so long ago now that I don't really remember if I even knew what hand poke was before she told me about it. Or if I just like had heard of it before, but never really thought about it. She goes, yeah, dude, you could. She's like, I've seen your art. Like, you could probably do a tattoo like today. And I was like, that's different. I could be willing to
that's
do that. And she goes, I know the tattooer in town. There's one established tattoo shop in Sayulita. I think that's literally the case now. I know they have like private studios and stuff. But there's this one tattoo shop. She goes, I know the owner. Let's go down there tomorrow. We'll ask him.
I think I told you I got one of my tattoos there.
Yeah. So yeah, the guy that owns that shop chops. Yeah. and his little family. They're so cute. So anyways, we go in there with Karen and she's friends with him and she's like, hey, my friend like really wants to learn tattoo. She's a really good artist. Like, he gives me my first needles and a little bit of ink and gloves. And then I go and buy like all the other sanitation, like alcohol and plastic and all the things I needed. You know, I'd done a little bit of research more of like how to set up and sanitation stuff. And I looked up a bunch of things. 'Cause like, I don't want to do this wrong.
Right.
So I give her the first tattoo I ever did at our kitchen table. Dude, I felt like I had done that before. It was like so strange. And I knew that I would keep doing it and that I wanted, it was so intriguing to me. So I was like, okay, here we are. We're going to keep doing this. And so I tattooed a bunch of her friends. My mom came out to visit. Mind you, my mom was 60 at the time, and she obviously was the one who was like, don't get an apprenticeship. And she also, I would come home and have like, you know, another, oh, you got another tattoo. Wow, that one's really big. You know, like, you know.
A little bit of friction there.
Yeah, a little bit of friction there. Perfect, yeah. She wasn't like opposed to them necessarily. I wouldn't say that, but like definitely not a favorite thing that I was doing. So she's coming down to visit me. And I'm like, hey, mom, can you bring, you know, I started hand poke tattooing. I'm going to order some stuff on Amazon. Can you bring it to Mexico when you come. And she goes, well, I want a tattoo. And I was like, oh, really? Like, look who's come around. What do you want? She's like, I want a dragonfly tattoo. And it was a symbol for my dad who had passed a couple years before. And I was like, that's perfect. I totally want to do a dragonfly tattoo. I was like, where do you want it? She goes, right here on my hand, like on her, in between like her thumb and like
index finger. Just the most right visible the spot.
Oh, yeah. The most. She's like, well, I want to see it every day. And I'm just like, okay, here we are tattooing my mom at my kitchen table. And she's giving her first tattoo and she's 60 years old. It was really, really, really special. And that is something that hand poke, it almost always is really intimate and really special. And there's some kind of disconnect that happens when you put a machine in between those things. Mm. And I'm not saying that machine's not special too, because it definitely is. And we'll get into that later. But yeah, hand poke is where I started, and that's what I did for 2 years. So I tattooed a bunch of people. We were traveling and living on the beaches in Mexico for months after that. And then I brought it back to San Diego, and I was happier. I was doing the art that I wanted to do, and I was making better money than I was making doing graphic design. So I slowly started doing way more hand poke and way less design. Yeah, so that's where I started.
One, I'm so sorry to hear about your dad. I didn't know that he had passed. Mm-hmm. And obviously everybody goes on their own journey, and that is such a personal experience. But that is also something that we have in common, that we've lost a parent at a mm-hmm. young age. My mom died a few years ago. And I guess just thinking about, like, that shifted the entire trajectory of my life.
Oh, 100%.
In really beautiful ways that I'm really grateful for.
I was going to say the exact same thing. Yeah. It sounds so weird, and I think it's really nice to have conversations with people that have had those similar experience, because I don't feel so weird saying it might have been one of the best things that ever happened.
Yeah.
To me.
Like, absolutely the worst too. You know, like,
oh, 100%.
You know, it's that, no, like, question. It's not black and white. There's mm-hmm. it's so fluid. But
well,
yeah.
Absolutely. Once you're on the other side of an event like that, what choice do you have other than to choose to focus on the good things that come from it?
Yeah. Right.
Because otherwise you're choosing to dwell on something you can't do anything about.
Right. 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 Mm-hmm. And you can feel all the, like, pain and sadness of that. And mm-hmm. also recognize, like, that has brought a whole new lens to my life. And I don't know exactly how to describe that, but it's brought, like, a lens of, like, magic, like something really sparkly and bright and exciting to my life, because I recognize for the first time ever, really, or, like, felt for the first time ever, like, none of us knows how long we get here. Oh. And we're all prancing around in this game of, like, you got to make money, you got to be successful, you got to look good, you can't, you know, like, what if people don't like what you're doing? Da, da, da. And then when you see somebody die, it's like, who
that
fucking
shit
cares?
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
No. Doesn't matter at all. Yeah. It makes you step back a little bit.
Yeah. And I think that, I guess, knowing that now too, people make decisions for all kinds of reasons. But for you as a young person to say, like, I'm going to travel the world, I'm going to be really free, I'm going to choose this career that allows me to live first and foremost. Like, I'm not going to worry about making too much money. I'm going to, like, cover my costs of living. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny that you kind of connected the dots there that I haven't really thought about in a long time. My dad was from Italy originally. And he, when he was in his very, very early 20s, left Italy and went to England, learned English in a matter of months because he was 100% surrounded by people that didn't speak his native language. So he was forced to learn very quickly. And then he started working on a cruise ship and traveled the world. And, you know, you work seasonally, so you work 6 months, you make so much money because you're not spending anything. And I don't think that cruise jobs are like that anymore.
Yeah.
I think that back in the day, they used to be way more lucrative, and you worked like crazy, but you had these spouts of time that you were completely free and had so much money. So he would live like a king, and he leased BMWs, he lived in hotels, he'd go to 5-star restaurants and ball out and then do it all again and work a bunch. That kind of, like, freedom and excitement and change and adventure definitely spoke to me, like, my whole childhood. There was actually a point in my life where I applied to work on a cruise ship, got the job, and I don't really remember the series of events that led me to not take the job. But, yeah, I think that the way he lived his life was definitely a big reason the way that how I live my life.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Open Exploration Podcast. There are so many more twists and turns to Kat's story, so many roadblocks and unforeseen obstacles, and Kat just crashing on through them to achieve her goals. So keep an eye out for part two. In the meantime, check out her work and find tickets for the Old Soul Fiesta at Old Soul, that's S-O-L, newtricks.com. This podcast is produced by me, Lily Worthen. Thank you to Poddington Bear, John Sib, and the other unlisted artists for sharing your music that brings this podcast to life. And to all of you listening, thank you, love to you all, and until next time, happy exploring.